Good afternoon, America. Welcome to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop on Washington, where we bring you all the news from the nation's capital that the government does not want you to know. I'm your host, former congressional attorney Mark Levine. I used to work, as I said, as an attorney in Congress, and I was amazed at all the information that we had that was never conveyed to the American people. That's why I'm here on the air, giving you the inside scoop. Our topic today is the Intelligence Reform Bill in Congress. It looks like it's going to pass. And this, of course, is the end of a long effort with all kinds of interesting legislative shenanigans that went around, including the Speaker of the House, Republican Denny Hastert, saying, in effect, that a minority should control. A majority, of course, of members of Congress wanted to pass this bill long before, but Denny Hastert said it had to be the majority of the majority. In other words, a majority of Republicans, even if the majority of the House was against the bill. Well, apparently all that's gotten past us, and there is some fig leaf provision for Armed Services Chairman Duncan Hunter, and the bill will become law. And I want to talk this hour with two guests, Charlie Mitchell, Legislative Counsel, and some of the interesting questions we have about it, such as whether or not surveillance has increased. How has our civil liberties, are they in danger from this bill? Has it helped our homeland security at all? Has it changed the ability of the president to manipulate intelligence? And one of the most interesting questions that has not been resolved is the question of driver's licenses for illegal aliens. Should we have immigrants being able to get driver's license? Does that help our security? Does that harm our security? And we're going to ask them those questions, and we're going to hear from you as well. The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. Of course, that's not all the news that there is. There's a lot going on, and some of it I'll be reporting to you later on in the week. One of the most interesting things that's come to everyone's attention is the affidavit of Clinton Curtis. Maybe I shouldn't say everyone because I don't know that the mainstream press is reporting this very much. But Clinton Curtis is a software developer down in Florida. And he has signed an affidavit that Tom Feeney, the Speaker of the Florida House, who later became a member of Congress, approached him about having voting machines that could change elections and the fraud, and no one could notice. And, of course, the question comes as to whether these machines were used in Florida. I'm exploring this issue. I don't have all the facts on it yet. I want to get the facts before I report them to you, but please know I am deafened. Hopefully I can get that back to you later on in the week. There's more stories, of course. There's President Bush has come back from Canada. One of the most interesting things I heard about that was there was a right-wing hack on radio say that, oh, and did you see how the Canadians staged that taking down of President Bush's statue? I was frankly surprised he noticed it because there's been a virtual media blackout about the intense opposition Canadians have had to President Bush's visit. Remember, he was so afraid, our president, capital, to speak. But even there, of course, you had the statue of Bush coming down. And again, I thought it was really funny that the right-wing talk radio hosts were complaining about that. They said it was staged. What they didn't report was that the taking down of Saddam Hussein's statue that was widely reported in the media was also staged. The taking down of President Bush, which got no press, was staged as an obvious satire, as an obvious remembrance of taking down Saddam Hussein's statue. But remember, Saddam Hussein's statue was taken down, was broadcast all over the world. But they broadcast it at close camera angle. What they didn't show, and what you can find if you look on the internet, is if you move the cameras back and show the full courtyard, you can see that it's only about 100 people or so participating in that demonstration. The American troops kept out the great majority of Iraqi people who may not have been as positive towards the U.S. troops. There's lots more. Of course, the omnibus bill that looks at let members of Congress read your taxes that were accidentally inserted in to the $388 billion, 3,646-page bill that no members of Congress were allowed a chance to read. Nancy Pelosi, the Democratic leader, has suggested that maybe members of Congress should be allowed to read bills prior to passing them. After all, that is in the congressional rules. That's in the House rules. You have to have 3 days. Well, her request was rudely denied. The Republicans insisted that members of Congress pass bills without having a chance to read them. Apparently, that's part of the Republican plan, part of the Republican contract on America. Don't let members of Congress read bills. And one of my questions, in fact, on this intelligence bill is whether members of Congress are actually going to have a chance to read it, or is this another thing that's going to be forced through? Again, I basically support most of what goes on in this bill, I think, but it's hard to tell when you're not given a full chance to read the bill. So one of the questions I'll have for my guest is whether or not that's something that will be allowed. And I also do want to talk about the question of driver's licenses for illegal immigrants. We all know the driver's licenses. According to him, it's a threat to our security, and they shouldn't have them. Now, what's interesting to me is there's really two separate issues here. There's the whole issue of illegal immigration with cheap labor, and in many ways, this is a problem which both Democrats and Republicans have compounded. Republicans want those cheap wages for employers, so they tend not to punish anyone hiring illegal immigrants. Democrats tend to be more concerned for the people themselves who, though they came here illegally, are here in America trying to seek a better life. And in fact, the economy in California and other states, illegal immigrants have driver's licenses for security purposes. Different views on that. I want to introduce my first guest, though. He is Charlie Mitchell. He's the legislative counsel for the American Civil Liberties Union. Probably tomorrow or the next day, it looks like it's going to pass both houses of Congress. Does it restrict American civil liberties?
Well, we think that overall it's a net loss for civil liberties. We think there was significant effort on the part of particularly Senator Collins and Lieberman to make the bill better, and the Senate version certainly was a lot more respectful of our concerns. We think that the compromise language has gotten rid of a few of the protections that we had felt that we had gained. The biggest concerns we have is, I mean, this is a massive consolidation of surveillance power in one intelligence director, and when you have that, it sort of requires that you have safeguards involved. And one of the biggest safeguards in the Senate version was this Civil Liberties Board. It had a certain level of independence, various departments, and the compromise language has eliminated the independence of the board in the sense that they now are all selected by the president and they all serve at the pleasure of the president, so they're not fixed terms anymore, and there's no requirement of, you know,
present board with staggered terms so that different presidents might appoint them, and this independent body would be a watchdog, would make sure that this surveillance political opponent, see what the political opponent's doing. If the board doesn't want it, he could just fire them and hire someone new. Is that right?
Well, I mean, there's certainly, I mean, I would hope that he wouldn't use the board in that way. But
I would hope not either.
They do serve at the pleasure of the president. So, I mean, there's certainly going to be a lot less ability to sort of issue a challenge to a particular policy or to sort of
going to our troops, which, mm-hmm. frankly, one, didn't seem to me to be that controversial, and two, the fix seemed to me to be a fig leaf. It didn't really seem to change much. Was there any civil liberty problems with that particular provision?
We haven't been involved in that.
Yeah, see, I didn't think that was a particularly controversial provision, and yet you have this provision, which basically changes a watchdog group to help protect all of us from the government spying on us, and that was thrown out, and, you know, I didn't see that in my Washington Post today.
Well, not for lack of our trying.
I'm sure that's true. Let me ask you this. I think it's important that our listeners understand that neither you nor I are just sort of saying, oh, my God, what if the president's corrupt? Martin, by the FBI, by J. Edgar Hoover, precisely because his views, King's views, ending segregation and so forth, were seen as dangerous to the government. And they spied on him. They tried to see if he was a communist, and they couldn't find anything like that, which they tried to use against him. What extra surveillance powers does this bill give, if at all, to this new National Director of Intelligence? And what safeguards are there to prevent, again, if at all, spying on a political...
Well, it almost seems ironic here that the ACLU was really pushing for the FBI to be left in charge of domestic surveillance. I mean, we've certainly had abuses in the past by the FBI, but at least the rules are in place for the FBI and the structure is in place that they don't do domestic surveillance unless it's a criminal investigation, supposedly.
So let's get this straight. I mean, my understanding is actually that in the 60s these safeguards weren't in place. Since J. Edgar Hoover's misuse of authority, there are safeguards in the FBI to prevent these kinds of
right. But I mean, as you've also seen, I don't know, recently the ACLU has issued a bunch of FOIA requests because we have we'd be back in the business of spying on Americans, and we think that was a victory. That was one of the original proposals that we think was a win.
And just to explain terms, FOIA, by the way, for those of you that are not in the Beltway, stands for Freedom of Information Act. It is a safeguard that's been in our government, I believe, since the 60s. Correct me if I'm wrong, Charlie, but the idea is that for open government, that people can find out what's going on. I happen to know, and this is totally apart from this question, from my sources, that Bush authorities are playing around with those requests and basically not giving straight answers. And so that's a separate problem. But let me get back to this bill hanging on us.
Right.
We want, I think most Americans would agree, we want the government to spy on the terrorists.
Want,
if we have an al-Qaeda cell in the United States, we want to know who they are and what they're doing.
Right.
But at the same time, we don't want an innocent American, maybe someone who is because of any crime they've committed, but because, of other reasons. How in this bill, what safeguards are there, I guess I should ask? And what safeguard, or maybe the question is, what safeguards aren't there?
Well, the weakened Civil Liberties Board is still a bit of a safeguard in terms of how it can act. We're just not sure how strong. And leaving the domestic intelligence gathering in the hands of the FBI, so it's case-based rather than just spying, is a little bit of a safeguard. There are plenty of issues here. I mean, we have the expansion of federal wiretapping power that are issued through the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, which sits in secret. Now that's been expanded so that you no longer have to be – I mean, this only applies to non-citizens, but now it can be used on individuals who have no affiliation with any foreign group or foreign government. So it's really going to ease the ability of the government to get these secret wiretap orders on non-citizens.
So basically all non-citizens can be watched for no particular reason whatsoever?
They can – well, the government could get a wiretap order. If there is a FISA wiretap on the non-citizen's phone, then it's possible.
And, of course, the FISA is a secret court, and they don't have to show any evidence of any crime committed to get that wiretap, right?
Correct. I mean, another issue in this bill that we had seen in the Patriot 2 draft sounds somewhat minor. It's the automatic pretrial detention for terrorism suspects. And again, you know, when you throw the word terrorism in there, everyone wants terrorists to be held in jail and not be out and running around before their trials. But as we've seen, most of the Justice Department cases that they bring on terrorism charges, they disintegrate and they turn into a minor immigration violation generally.
Well, of course, we have the case of Yasser Hamdi, who was, just to remind our listeners, that Americans without trial, without even access to a lawyer for a number of years because the government, I guess, thought he was dangerous, and then just a few months ago was completely let go, let free to Saudi Arabia, raising the question was of if he was extremely dangerous, why was he let go free? And if he wasn't dangerous, why was he kept in jail without access to a lawyer for 2 years? It seems to me that when we go beyond due process, we get these cases where innocent people are I guess, mixed up in the process.
Well, and what's happening here with this smallish change is just that the judge no longer has the discretion. When the Justice Department comes forward and clearly doesn't have a strong case, if it's a terrorism charge, the person is held without bail. They can't be released, even if the judge finds that there's no danger and they aren't a flight risk. I mean, so it's another step in taking away the ability of the judge to look beyond the simple charge of the Justice Department. And so that certainly raises concerns.
Let me move on to another issue, and I don't know if you have an opinion on this, but one of my concerns, frankly, since I first came on the air a year and a half ago, it was in my very second show, in fact. It was called Manipulation of Intelligence, was my second show. And at that time, there was virtually no report of it. There's been a lot more now. But I was given the inside scoop of something that was commonly known in Washington but not commonly known in the rest of the country at that time. I think it's more well known now. That basically when President Bush or the people in charge of him, Vice President Cheney or the others, Don Rumsfeld, made a decision, what they did is instead of doing what most people would like to do when you make a decision, a tough decision like whether to go to war or not, most people, I would think, would gather in all the intelligence, look at all the facts, have it come together, look at them, and then make a decision. Instead, what Bush was doing, or again, maybe the people in charge are really Cheney and Rumsfeld, but the people in the Bush administration were making a decision first and then going back to the intelligence and cherry-picking those small parts of raw intelligence that support their decision and ignoring all the rest. That's at least my understanding of what happened. I guess my question for you is not that factual question, but whether or not the intelligence reform bill in any way changes the power of the president to cherry pick intelligence.
Well, it limits the amount of voices. I mean, and it's all going to be filtered through the National Intelligence Director. And I know that in the House version of this bill, there was a provision that sort of made Porter Goss as CIA director immediately slide into the position of National Intelligence Director. And I mean, if I haven't found that provision, I'm still sort of flipping through this last compromise version. But, you know, there's a consolidation of voices. So the voices of dissent are going to be shut out. And if you've got a National Intelligence Director who is within the, you know, not fully independent, then sure, you're going to have the potential for someone who's aiming to please, and you've got one voice rather than hearing from the folks who might say, wait, you're misusing the information we gave you.
On a side note, you said you're just flipping through the bill, the compromise version pages, is it?
The compromise version.
Chance to read them. You just got this compromise bill, what, today?
Oh, well, I've had a copy for a few days here, but...
Okay, so this is a bill that members of Congress will actually have a chance to read before they pass. That's good to know.
It's a theory.
It's a theory.
Yeah.
Well, obviously they may not exercise it, but at least they have the time to do it, which is good because that's not always the case. Before you go, and I know you don't have a lot of time with us, I do want to ask one question about an issue that did not get resolved. I know the House Judiciary cares a lot about, and that's the question of driver's licenses for illegal immigrants. There are two issues here as I see it. One is the issue that probably I don't know if the ACLU is even taking a position on, and that's the question of employment and illegal immigration and what we can do. Totally apart from the issue of what we should do to punish, and we know, for example, that many of them had Virginia driver's licenses, and using those as a way to get identification to harm Americans. And Sensenbrenner, I know, for example, would cite that as an example of why we shouldn't do it. But on the other hand, I happen to believe that if illegal immigrants are completely undocumented, they're harder to track than if we had some document like a driver's license, and maybe we should even put a label on it, whether you're a citizen or not. So let me throw out the issue there entirely. I'm going to let my listeners have a chance to call in later in the hour. Let me ask your position on illegal immigrants and driver's licenses. What protects our security better?
Well, I mean, the ACLU hasn't really, barring the acceptance of matriculas, so which is the, you know, sort of
the Mexican driver's
the
license
government. So you would think that you'd have higher security with at least some form of identification allowed, and if you're not going to allow one, you know, why disallowing the other? And, you know, we've also been concerned when you touch on the immigration issues, the ones that were kept out. I mean, some of these were pretty remarkable attempts at sort of revoking visas at will, and, you know, forcing people who are seeking asylum to essentially have a note from their persecutor explaining why they were being persecuted against.
Wait, I want to explore this because this bill is likely to come back, and I want to give the inside scoop on it before it actually comes
sure.
to become news. My understanding is President Bush has agreed that even though this is not going to be in the current intelligence reform bill, they're going to revisit this issue. So I think we may very well see it again in the future.
Oh, we will definitely see this again in the future. In fact, David Dreyer today, Representative Dreyer, said that he had a guarantee from the speaker that these asylum issues would be attached to the Iraq war. I mean,
okay,
that's
so why don't you explain? Well, let's give the details because,
as always,
the depth is not just speaking generalities. What is it, an asylum seeker, let me explain to our listeners. I think many understand if somebody comes to this country because they're being persecuted, let's say, for example, that they're fleeing from the genocide in Sudan, just to give an example, though obviously their country's all over the earth. People are being persecuted for whatever reason, for their race, religion, sexual orientation, lots of things. If they come here because they're being persecuted, someone escaping the Sudanese genocide, how would that person get asylum? And would they have to get a note from the Sudanese government? I mean, how does that work?
They have to have corroborating evidence that the reason they are fleeing is because they're being persecuted, and they have to show that either their political opinion, their race, or religion is the central reason they're being persecuted.
So in other words, if people come into the Sudanese village and start hacking and killing
right.
all the blacks in the village because there's the conflict basically in Sudan is between Arab people and African peoples and to some extent also between Muslims and Christians. But so let's say that they go into the village, a bunch of Arabs from the north of Sudan, and they kill or attempt to kill all the blacks there,
mm-hmm.
But they don't say, we're killing you because you're black, or we're killing you because you're Christian. They just go out and kill
right.
And that person manages to escape across the border to another country and make it to the United States. That person, that wouldn't be good enough? They need a note? Hi,
well,
we're killing you because you're black?
Some sort of evidence that it wasn't simply because maybe they wanted their land or for their...
This is a change in current law. I mean, I assume you could show, for example, that the government has a policy of persecuting blacks persecuting Africans, I should say, and that they have this policy, number one, and number two, this incident happened, I guess.
Well, fact is sort of decide whether that's what's going on. I mean, this is really limiting the ability to review fairly. I mean, that's what's going on. I mean, a lot of these changes just change the ability of decision, and that's what's happening here. It's not allowing sort of the trier to listen and make up their mind. They're going to have some sort of, you know, corroborating evidence.
Well, you know, of course, there's that wonderful inscription by Emma Lazarus under the Statue of Liberty, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses longing to be free. I guess we have to say, give me your tired, poor, huddled masses longing to be free, with a note from the people who persecuted them saying it's okay to bring them in. We'll have to change the inscription on the statue. Thank you. I know you didn't have a lot of time.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much. We're going to get your calls in just a second. The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. And let me give about my plan for driver's licenses for immigrants, the Mark Levin plan. I haven't seen it published anywhere, though I'm sure someone thought of this. Here's my plan. My view is that they should get driver's licenses, but that they could have a letter on it. In other words, if you're a citizen, you get the letter C. If you're not a citizen, you can't prove your citizenship, you get your driver's license, but you don't put the letter C on it. That way, in my view, it solves lots of problems. One, we get to monitor the illegal immigrants that come in because there will be some document. Number two, if they have a driver's license and they're stopped for speeding, they'll have a speeding record. If there's an accident, that you can require someone to have insurance, so that protects all of us. But it doesn't mislead anyone. If someone's at an airport, they can see you're a citizen or you're not a citizen. If you're not a citizen, they may require additional documents, such as a green card or things like that. In my mind, giving illegal immigrants driver's licenses actually protects all of us. And again, by putting that code there, we can help deal with some of the problems where, you know, we distinguish between them. Although I should note that I don't put it past an American citizen to commit a crime or a terrorist attack either. I wouldn't want them to only to look at the non-citizens. So I happen to think they should have driver's licenses, but I want to hear from you. Toll free 877-57-SCOOP. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levin.
This is Ed from New York, and I just heard something that I don't know. I wonder if you can find out or know something about.
Sure.
And that is that the bill, that is the new intelligence bill that's being passed,
right,
provides for every American should have to carry an identity card.
Well, I don't think it does that, but I'll tell you, my next guest, who we're going to get after the break, Monica Gabriel, she's on the line, Ed. We're going to go to commercial break, and you can ask her that question when we come back, all right?
All right, I'll do that.
Hang on. We'll be right back with more of the Inside Scoop right after these messages. All you have to do is dial toll-free 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-S11 victim on the Family Steering Committee. She's someone that has worked hard to see that this bill come to pass. We're going to ask her some questions about the intelligence reform bill. We'll be right back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this.
You do teach basic ethics to your children, don't you? You know, the difference between right and wrong. For example, I'm sure you teach them that if they get caught violating a family rule, they shouldn't suffer any consequences, but instead should simply be allowed to change that rule to fit their circumstance. Luckily, you can now hold up Tom DeLay as the role model for your children on this ethical twist. DeLay, the Republican majority leader, keeps smashing into our society's rules with his bullying techniques and constant grabs for more political power for himself and his party. Twice this year, he's been brought up on serious ethical violations, but in both cases, he managed to have his behavior reviewed by the toothless, gutless House Ethics Committee, rather than an outside independent investigator. So he got away with what amounts to, "Please don't do that again, Tom." But now, he faces the real possibility of his ethics being judged outside his own little playhouse. A Texas grand jury has already indicted three of his top aides for laundering illegal corporate campaign funds. And DeLay could be next. His legal problems aside, but for Tom, since his own party's rules in corporate campaign funds. And DeLay could be next. His legal problems aside, but for Tom, since his own party's rules in Congress require that any leader who gets indicted must resign from the leadership post. But old Tom didn't get where he is by playing by anyone's fussy rules. So, in his words, he simply, quote, as their very first order of business following the November election, the Republican House caucus dutifully acted to shield their leader by scrapping that pesky ethics rule that would have forced DeLay to step down. As a result, even if he is indicted, he'll still be up there as the House Majority Leader, an ethical model for all our nation's children. This is Jim Hightower saying, actually, having an indicted man as the poster boy of the House Republicans might just be a very appropriate...
...that decongestants found in many leading cold medicines can raise your blood pressure and interfere with blood pressure medication. So why risk it? Only decongestant-free Coracidin HBP provides a line of safe, powerful cold and flu medication specially formulated for people with high blood pressure. So make the safe choice. Coracidin HBP. Use as directed.
Ready to play the numbers game?
Ready.
Okay. What could you buy for the cost of one stealth bomber?
Ooh, those are expensive. Could you build a new school?
You could build 110 of them. Or you could send 30,000 people to college for 4 years.
How much are those things?
$2.2 billion. That's more than the annual UN budget for famine relief.
Wait, we spend more on one airplane than the UN gets for famine relief?
Yeah. Sad, isn't it? Think about it. For more information, visit www.borgenproject.org. That's B-O-R-G-E-N project.org.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, bringing you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. We're talking about the intelligence reform bill that looks likely to pass Congress, and my next guest is Monica Gabriel. Now, Monica Gabriel lost her husband on September 11th in the World Trade Center, but instead of retreating to mourning, as I think many would, she has worked diligently to fight to protect all Americans so that this kind of thing won't happen again. And she's been very active in working on this intelligence reform bill. And let me ask you about this bill. We just had a representative from the ACLU talking about some of the problems with it. What's your overall view of the bill? What's good in it? What's bad in it?
Well, I think overall, I think it's time to pass the an intelligence reform bill. It's not only 3 years post 9/11. Intel reform has been discussed for years prior to that with going back to the Joint Inquiry Report, which was done just prior to the commission set up, the Hart-Rudman, Scowcroft Report, and others. There's a definite need. Some of the things that were made public through the 9/11 Commission was the fact that not only were we in a Cold War posture, but that there was no one in charge, and everyone was at fault, and so no one was at fault. These are things that need to be fixed. In the event of another tragedy, whether it be another terrorist attack or whatever, we need to know going forward that there is someone at the helm who is in charge of the 15 agencies that is has the appropriations of not only the budgetary appropriations but also the resources to make sure that the information is gathered correctly, shared correctly, and given to the proper people that are, in charge of security.
Well, Monica, call me cynical, but I've read in Bob Woodward's book where he writes that then CIA head George Tenet said a few minutes after the first plane struck the World Trade Center, oh, my God, this is probably related to Zacharias Moussaoui. This is probably related to the person most believed to be the 20th hijacker. That George Tenet knew right away, in fact, it was an al-Qaeda plot, that Osama bin Laden was behind it. He knew within a few minutes right after September 11th, and in fact, we also know that the president got daily briefings saying bin Laden determined to attack the United States. I guess my question is it that intelligence failed us on September 11th, or was it the failure to properly use that intelligence?
Well, I think it's a combination of things. I think it's certainly a failure to connect the dots. It's the CIA and the FBI weren't communicating, you know, who had what information and what wasn't shared, and then coordinating that information and giving it to those who are charged to protect us. I think it's a combination of things. Now, I'm not an intelligence expert, but common sense dictates to me that it needs reform. When you have a commission who looked at millions of documents and interviewed thousands of people and had congressional hearings, and on top of issues of intelligence reform having been recommended prior to this, I think that, you know, this is certainly a positive step forward, and I think it's a critical step forward. Is it the be-all and end-all? I don't think so. There's much that still needs to be done with our government. I think it's sorely dysfunctional. I think congressional oversight needs to be addressed in the next Congress, including the terrorist funding issues, the money laundering and drying up terrorist funding, and then the bigger issue of the immigration needs to be debated and hearings held. So, I mean, this is certainly not a fix-all everything, but it certainly is a start.
And I don't mean to knock the commission. I understand that you can do a good thing without it fixing everything. I just simply want to make the point that whether we gather better intelligence, we should always gather better intelligence, but using that intelligence is also a problem, and I don't think that this bill fixes how the president or the administration uses intelligence, or does it?
Well, that I can't tell you, but with the NID in charge of intelligence, what you'll have now, which you didn't have before, is someone to be held responsible and accountable. And I think that is key. In any business that you have, when there are failures, people are held accountable. And what we had with September 11, with all the failures, there has not been one person that has been held responsible or accountable for their failures. And again, you know, going forward, we want to make sure that if there's another breakdown, that we can find out where that breakdown was, and there's one person that will be held responsible, and it's going to be his job to make sure those under him are doing their job, because he is going to be the ultimate person that's going to be the go-to guy where the buck stops.
I guess my question is this, though. I mean, I certainly agree with you that no one's been held accountable. There's no question about that. Even when George Tenet left, he supposedly resigned for family reasons, which I don't believe, and I don't think many do believe, but it seems to me that the choice to hold someone accountable or not is really the choice of the people in charge, whether to fire people who make mistakes or not. And I guess I'm not sure how this reform bill, and I'm sure it does many good things, but how it will change holding people accountable.
Well, I think that you know, we have to continue working to make the you know, this government responsible, and it's not a be all and end all fix with this bill. As I said, congressional oversight is sorely in need of a good look at, you know, that's a place to start. You have intel committees and you have oversight committees for you know, everything out there, and we have to make sure that they're doing their job, that they're going to these intelligence agencies or whatever and doing their oversight, and when they see failings, that they hold the people responsible as well. The thing that I find most difficult to understand is how we allowed our government to become a no-fault government. And we need to rally the people around and make them more aware that they have an obligation to hold their elected officials to the fire.
Well, my view is that we became an unaccountable government when we became a one-party state, that basically when Congress and the president are of different parties, they watch each other closely, but when they're of the same party, they're not doing as good a job. Let me ask you this, though. I know that there are things to praise in the bill, and just mentioning the things that it doesn't do isn't fair. Tell me some of the things that you think are most beneficial about the bill.
Well, some of the things, first of all, the NID. The
National Intelligence Director.
The National Intelligence Director. The NCTC, Counterterrorism Center, that's, I think, is ready to be up and running. I think that is a place where the information and analysts will be able to gather their information and spread it around where it needs to go. Also, we have improved training for air marshals. We have biometric system for our borders, stronger visa applications, border patrol agents. We have a mandate for the FBI to update its information technology system.
I know that's important because their computers are state-of-the-art 1983, I think, at best.
they've been upgrading and they had to trash the whole thing and start over again. That's unbelievable. That's my tax dollars. So we need to make sure that that's done in a timely fashion. The reallocation of funding for local and immediate responders. And I think very important also is the creation of an independent privacy and civil liberties board to review government policies and practices.
Now, we just talked with Representative ACLU, and what he said was that the Senate actually had
a civil liberties board is crucial.
Let me go to the phones. If you want to call in and ask either myself or Ms. Gabrielle a question, feel free to do so. The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP and 57-SCOOP. Before the commercial,
I'd like to ask your guest the question I asked before, and that is, does the bill require Americans to carry national identity cards? And what would these cards consist of, and what can she...
IDs for people. Right. And I think that the need that the issues that were out there, the controversial issues, was the driver's license. And although we need to, our visa process allowed them to get through, so we need to strengthen those. As far as the national ID card, I'm not quite sure what the specifics are in the bill regarding that. And
it may be the case, I guess we have to look at the bill more clearly, but
yeah.
But it may be the case that all of us who want to board a plane are going to have to get a new piece of ID?
To be honest with you, I don't think the national ID card is an issue, but certainly a standard for getting...
Just a second, caller. Go ahead, finish, Ms. Gabriel.
The standards for, IDs.
Cards.
Okay. Well, we will definitely take a look at that as things go on in the future. Thank you very much for your call. I appreciate that. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine and Monica Gabriel.
Yeah, I have in my hand the book Inside Job. I don't know how many of you people look with great suspicion on our present government as to whether or not they didn't at the very least, have to turn and look the other way to allow this to happen for almost 2 hours.
You're talking about the fact that we didn't shoot down the planes after the first attacks.
If these planes go off course or their transponder goes off, within 2 minutes they got a fighter jet coming at them at twice the speed of a bullet.
Well, Dave, you raise a great question, which I can ask Ms. Gabriel. It goes beyond the course of the scope of the intelligence reform, but really goes to the basic question: do we know now? Do we now understand after all the 9/11 Commission met and thousands of documents and hundreds of days of hearings, do we now understand what went wrong in our government that allowed the attacks to occur?
Well, the commission put out their report. One of the things that we had hoped for would be a redacted report, a declassified, such as the Joint Inquiry Report, where we would know what we didn't know. Unfortunately, that's not the case.
So it's entirely classified, the report?
No, what we don't know is what was classified. Out in that report you cannot see what's redacted. There are no black marks in it.
So you can't, for example, find out what they're talking about and maybe not read the name of an agent. You just can't know even what they're talking about.
Right. To give you an example, if anybody had seen the Joint Inquiry Report where they have the redacted 28 pages, which was in the media about the financing issue, if you read a report that's redacted, you know what you don't know, what's been classified. So you pretty much can figure out how much information is being withheld. Unfortunately, with the 9/11 Commission report, we don't know that. So, is there information that is maybe not in there? I'm sure there is. What it is, we don't know. And will we ever know the whole story based on the overclassification of information based on national security or whatever the reason? Probably not.
Monica, I assume the family's pressed to get at least a redacted report. I mean, didn't you ask that this be done? What did they
right.
tell you?
And since the staff statements were vetted through all the agencies, they basically used those to put the report together. So there was no need to go back and do a redacted report.
If I might, Monica, have you been exposed to this book, Inside Job?
No,
Jim Mars, M-A-R-R-S.
That's new to me.
Dave, thank you very much for your call. I appreciate it. Monica, I do want to ask you, though, about Dave's second issue, which is about our planes not scrambling enough. After the first World Trade Center tower was hit, of course, there were three other planes up in the air, And many shoot down one of those planes, if not two, to help save lives on the ground, and that it wasn't done in time. Have you? That's at least the charge that's out there. Can you confirm or deny that that's true? Have you learned anything about that, or is that still a mystery?
Well, the commission report addresses that, and this is the Cold War posture, that we were looking outward rather than inward, and some of the research shows that there were the planes were on these. NORAD planes were on exercises and unavailable, and also that they came from too far to make it in time. It's never been fully addressed to my satisfaction, but, you know, we go with what the commission report says, and they say that it was a Cold War posture, so we now have an opportunity to turn that around and make sure that the our intelligence services are not working in the 1950s, and they're working in 2004 with the threats that we have available. And going forward, if there should be another attack, that all these agencies that are to respond to something like this are aware that they have to look inward.
Monica, we have to go to commercial break. If you don't mind holding on, we just got a few minutes left after the break. I do want to ask you about the money laundering provisions and about the driver's license provisions that I guess weren't included. You got time to stay with
sure.
us? Okay, hold on. We'll be right back. You can call in and ask your question as well. The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. We'll be right back with Monica Gabrielle, family member of the Family Steering Committee, right after this.
Who was one of the biggest winners on November 2nd? Some bloke named Jerry Jones. He ran a $5 million ad blitz in Arlington, Texas, to win a vote that will put $325 million of government money into his own pocket. Jerry's the billionaire owner of the Dallas Cowboys, and the vote was to get taxpayers to build a luxury sports palace for his private business. He's just one of the billionaire sports owners across America who profess to love free enterprise, but shamelessly wallow in corporate welfare. Local politicians, eager to please these moneyed power brokers, back their billionaire boondoggles, even as basic needs in their cities go begging. Take New York City, where both Mayor Michael Bloomberg and Governor George Pataki have rushed to the aid of Robert Wood Johnson IV, known as Woody to his pals and political cronies. Woody is the heir to the Johnson & Johnson fortune, a backer of various far-right wing causes, one of the top Republican donors in the country, and owner of the New York Jets. It's in this latter capacity that Woody, a fervent free enterpriser, wants a government handout. He says his team must have a new stadium to play in, and both Bloomberg and Pataki are there for him. They're offering $600 million from New York taxpayers to build poor Woody a privileged for-profit playground on a stretch of Manhattan's most valuable land. These are the same two political leaders who keep shortchanging New York school kids, claiming there's just no money to meet their needs. 94% of the city's schools have no athletic fields, and more than half have no playgrounds for the kids. Forget playgrounds. The kids' schools are dangerously dilapidated. Parents and teachers have to chip in to buy the most basic classroom supplies, and some school bathrooms don't even have toilet paper. This is Jim Hightower saying, here's a modest proposal. Not another dime in welfare for billionaires until every school is fully stocked with toilet paper.
Your dog eats your new sofa. Pet satisfaction rating 3%. Your hairdresser doesn't know burnt auburn from burnt toast. Hair color satisfaction rating 5%. After years of marriage, your husband still leaves the seat up. Spouse satisfaction rating minus 2%. Your car insurance company saves you hundreds of dollars and handles your claim quickly and fairly. Car insurance satisfaction rating 97%. Oh, you must have Geico.
Geico's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? Geico. 1-800-947-AUTO.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello, relief.
Prilosec's label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec? Nah. Zantac's for people who hate to wait, especially at night. Use as directed.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We have just a few minutes left with our guest. Her name is Monica Gabriel. She lost her husband on September 11th in the World Trade Center, but instead of spending all the time mourning, which I'm sure she has done, she has also taken the time to try to protect all of us from a future attack. And we're talking about the Intelligence Reform Bill that's just going through Congress, and we're taking your calls. Toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine and Monica Gabriel.
And I'm Alice from Humboldt County.
Hello, Alice. How are you?
I've read so much of this Inside Job. It's a real eye-opener. And in the preface, it tells about the woman who lost her husband, Ellen Marini.
There are many. There are many women who lost their husbands.
It says, this preface is an open letter to the American people, and it comes straight from my heart. I ask that you read this book and discover for yourself why the attack of September the 11th, 001, were in fact an inside job. Jim Mars makes the case in this book. I intend to prove it in court of law. And she's got, they offered her $700,000 to keep her mouth shut.
Alice, do you think that Jim Mars makes his case?
Definitely.
And when it's an inside job, there's two ways. There's either Bush did not prevent something he should have prevented, which I've argued, or it actually could be something much more nefarious, that actually he caused September 11th. Is that what you're arguing?
He caused it.
That's what you believe?
Yes, I do.
Well, let me hear from Ms. Gabrielle. Ms. Monica, how do you respond to people who believe like Alice and read books that suggest that?
Well, I think that there are so many theories out there and so many opinions, and what I've always said is that if there is no transparency...
I can't hear you very well.
Okay. Speak up a little bit, Monica.
If there is no transparency in an investigation and you don't get answers... it lends itself to theories like this, and that's why we've always pushed for openness and transparency and the answers. And one of the things that need to be done is some of these theories explained, away, if you will. Otherwise, they will continue to fester.
Alice, I want to thank you very much for calling the Inside Scoop. We only have a few minutes left. I do want to briefly address the issue of driver's licenses for illegal immigrants, because I do think it's going to come up again. My own view is that we should give them driver's licenses, but have a letter on it to say, for a C, for example, for citizen. If you're a citizen, you get a driver's license that says you're a citizen. And if you're not, you still get a driver's license. People can be tracked, but we don't claim they're citizens when they're not. I haven't really seen anyone propose this compromise solution, but I am curious to hear, Monica, what you think of that idea or anything else dealing with the immigrants getting a driver's license.
Well, I that's certainly a good idea. And again, the immigration issue is something that does need to be addressed. We do have a problem with illegal immigration, and that's something for the 109th Congress to do. I think that it's a volatile issue. I think it's a controversial issue, and it will take a lot to address the problems. Remembering that a driver's license is basically used to testify to the ability of the driver of a car, that they are able to drive a car. It's a safety mechanism, less so an identifier. And for that reason alone, everyone should have driver's licenses so that we know that those that are on the road are capable of doing so. How that then is used to distinguish between illegal or citizens, that remains to be seen. But it's certainly something that's up for debate and public debate in this next year. I wholeheartedly hope that Mr. Sensenbrenner is there when Congress reconvenes to bring this to the table.
Monica, I want to thank you very much for taking the time out of your busy schedule and coming here on the Inside Scoop.
Well, I appreciate being on this program, Mark.
Thanks again.
Have a good day.
You too. I do want to read a comment on the blog about this illegal immigration issue, having the driver's license. It comes from Rick, and he says, I don't think it makes logical sense to give illegal immigrants driver's licenses. Think about it. They are illegal. It'd be like a scarlet letter. It's like a shoplifter registering at the store door that he's a shoplifter. And then Rick argues we need to give them a grace period of time where illegals can apply for citizenship, then receive a temporary work permit and driver's license, and so forth. And then he also says if they're provided with a driver's license, it should be marked. In other words, if you're under 21, that's marked. So he likes at least the part of my proposal that says we should mark whether you're a citizen or not. But I have to disagree with you, Rick, and I don't often disagree with you. You're frequent. But I disagree with you that it doesn't make logical sense to get him a driver's license. I have to agree with Monica. A driver's license should be issued if you're capable to drive. And it has uses totally apart from a national ID. It tells a cop if they stop your car who you are. It can provide under state law that you have to get insurance so that if you hit someone, you're responsible. And frankly, I don't think a police officer who sees your ID should necessarily do anything about the immigration laws. The point is he's there to make sure that I guess there's no warrant for your arrest, but also to enforce the driving laws. So my provision, and many have suggested, for example, that, well, you can't tell whether someone's illegal or not because people come here on tourist visas that later expire. My provision is once you're a citizen, it's very hard to revoke your citizenship. Let's put citizenship on the driver's license and let illegal immigrants have it so they can drive, so they can get insurance. And also, I think, for security reasons, it's much more important for us to know who these people are, what their names are, and to have some ID than no ID at all. Remember what the choices are here. This isn't a question of do we reward illegal immigrants with a driver's license. It's not a question of reward. Maybe we shouldn't reward them with jobs. Maybe we should punish employers that hire them. But the question of a driver's license is, does it help those of us who are American citizens, who are legally here? And I think it does. It's better to have some information on these people than no information on these people. And I think people would apply for them. I think it's not like a scarlet letter. I think many people would register for them. And it certainly has some uses. And I think that a lot of the opposition to letting illegal immigrants have driver's license is indeed punitive.